Welcome to the Thinking Fellows podcast. I'm producer Caleb, and I'm joined by Drs. Rod Rosenblatt, Scott Keith, Adam Francisco, and Dr. Dan Van Voris, who is our guest once again on our new series, Great Thinkers of the Christian Faith. If you've been listening to the series, you know that we are hopping around history, and I just wanted to highlight that one more time because I think it's important that we kind of adjust our mindset every time we get into one of these episodes that we're not taking off where we left off last time, like we did during the Apologetics series or like during the Lochi series, that these definitely play off of each other, and you're going to hear mention of some of the episodes that we've done in the past, but that these are kind of individual topics, individual introductions to these great minds in the Christian faith. And so the idea is to bring some of the best current thinkers we have on these great minds. And so once again, we have Dr. Dan Van Voris on the show to talk about Machen, American figure. So this is going to be our first American on the series. And
right.
Hey.
I wanted to be sure that this time we did a proper introduction for Dr. Van Voorhees. We didn't do that last time. He was a professor at Concordia University Irvine in history and political thought for a long time. How many years?
11 years.
11 years for a long time. He's told me before he started young.
I started when I was 25.
Yeah. And this this past year, towards the end of the year, he came to work for 1517, the Legacy Project, full time. He is the director. We've called him sometimes the executive director of
League of Faithful Masks.
He also directs and is a co-host for Virtue in the Wasteland, a very popular podcast, also part of 1517, the Legacy Project. And father of two.
Two boys.
Husband of one.
Husband of one, absolutely. And so happy to be here. Happy to be on the show again to talk about some important stuff. Last time we talked about Arndt, Johann Arndt.
Right, and I said that today that I didn't know at all that you had some expertise in Machen until today, and Caleb said,
I love the guy. Let me tell you why. Let's say in, you know, the 1620s, True Christianity becomes the most important book in Western Christendom for its effects. Listen to the other show. 300 years later, J. Gresham Machen writes a book called Christianity and Liberalism. That is the book to buy. And that becomes the most significant book for shaping American Christianity in the 20th and now the 21st century. It's not that bold a claim. Machen was the central figure in not only theological controversies around modernism, we'll get to that, but also in so many other ways, in terms of fighting. Rod, you mentioned some little things about Machen that I love.
Yeah, a couple of things. One is he never, never acknowledged that the state should be in charge of religion, quote. Fought it in every way he could, wrote on it. There's even a Machen book on that, Christianity and the State. And the other thing for which I remember him as kind of a fellow libertarian, he fought a jaywalking ticket in Philadelphia for 17 years till he won it. But the state has no right to tell him where he could walk.
He's your kind of guy.
He also argues, Rod, he argues against public education.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he says, we're not making typewriters.
Yep.
We're making people.
Yep.
Stop putting them in a
I like that. I think
I'm going to read more Machen.
You know, he's a fascinating character. There's a couple good links that you can. I'll give to you, Caleb.
Great. Fantastic.
So Machen, just to give you his context, he's born in 1881 in Maryland, and he dies in 1937. So he's living and working right in the crucible of American history, the time during and after World War I. This is how I came across Machen. It was historically looking at what happened in the 20s and seeing that things pertaining to religion were front page news.
Yep.
Whether it be the Scopes Monkey Trial, unfortunate,
yep.
Or it's the fundamentalist controversy,
yep.
Which Machen is right in the middle of. So if you're studying the 20s and 30s as a historian, you have to deal with Machen.
Yep.
You have to deal with the controversies that he's involved in. So 1881, he's born. He ends up going to Johns Hopkins, where he is a classics student. And he gets his PhD in the classics. And, you know, Dr. C.J. Armstrong at Concordia would love that. It's important, though, because he's got this expertise. One of the things that's so significant that Machen does is he writes the primer on New Testament Greek.
Yep. Yeah. Everybody used it.
Absolutely.
It was my textbook in Greek.
And it was the pre-mounts or whatever, you know. Yep. That was the thing he used.
Yeah.
And so he's able, theologically, it was to get people looking, perhaps in a different way, looking at Christianity in a different way. One of the ways he does that is in his work on the virgin birth.
Yep.
His work on the origins of Paul's theology.
Paul's religion.
Paul's religion, yeah. He's basically arguing for the truth of the Christian faith.
Yep.
Using evidentialist.
Yep.
Ground up evidence.
Yep.
For. So, you know, it's what Rod does. It's what John Montgomery, who we've got a bunch of his books. So that's important. This is what Nathan's
doing. It's important also to note that he could write a clear English sentence.
Christianity and Liberalism, the most important book, and one of the reasons is because it's readable.
Yep.
Because people could actually read it. And Christianity and Liberalism, so he goes to Johns Hopkins, he goes to Princeton Seminary. Princeton Seminary at this time is the bastion for Reformed Orthodoxy.
Yep.
In the early 1900s and in the 19th century, that's what Princeton Seminary is. And it's run by the Presbyterian Church. Will be called the Presbyterian Church USA, yep. The church that you're probably most familiar with. If there's a Presbyterian church on the corner, it's probably the PCUSA, especially here in California. It's important to see that that is the mainline and the conservative. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that all starts to break down. And it breaks down in the controversy that Machen is involved with.
I think it's also, we'll talk about fundamentalism. I think it's mm-hmm. important to throw in, he never really was one of them. He knew the difference, and they wanted him like crazy. But we'll get into that in a few minutes.
Machen is at this Princeton Seminary. Now he's teaching there, and this is where you go if you're a good Presbyterian. And then he starts to see what we'll call theological modernism creep into the seminary. Machen had seen this firsthand in 1905 when he himself went to Germany. Mm. Machen took a year in his PhD studies to go to Germany to study.
That's a dangerous endeavor.
It is a dangerous endeavor. Almost lost his faith.
Well, we lost almost a generation of Lutheran theologians by doing that.
Oh, absolutely.
Thing. And this is, Machen sees this. He's only there for a year, but he sees this as the most dangerous thing for Christianity. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, lack of morals or lack of, it is this question. So a gentleman named Harry Emerson Fosdick, he's a preacher, a Baptist preacher, and he...
New York. Riverside Church, finally.
Sort of the big church. And he's a very well-known pastor.
Yep.
And he preaches a sermon called, Shall the Fundamentalists Win? Mm. He doesn't mean the fundamentalists that you think of. It's not Westboro Baptist Church or the, you know, whatever church. The fundamentalists from the early 1900s to maybe the teens and into the 20s are based on Christian doctrine that is supernatural, that believes in five things. I can't get all five right now, but, you know, it's the virgin birth, it's the resurrection, it's the second coming. These things, right? These core doctrines.
Mm-hmm. And written by people who were very, very academic in the best sense of that word. That is, they actually believed what they were writing.
Right. Yeah. I remember Machen as being involved with other people like B.B. Warfield as being part of the group that defined inerrancy with its four parts, which
this is,
I do off the top of my head, but I probably get wrong. I think it's history, geography, theology, and ethics.
This is, yes, he does... He argues for the doctrine of inerrancy. He does it a certain way, and this is where maybe you want to stay away from him a little bit. Inerrancy in the 1920s and 30s is a Reformed thing, and perhaps Lutherans might be a little different than the Reformed that the word inerrancy. I wonder if we should use it in Lutheran circles, but it's helpful as a word that defines you against. So. Here's Machen. He's not a fundamentalist, but his professors and his group, B.B. Warfield, wrote the piece on evolution in the fundamentals.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And this is... Machen starts to see that there's this weird division happening. And this division is happening at the seminary with the students, and it's happening in the church. And that is, you're getting the fundamentalists start to focus on morals. Mm. And the modernists, their enemies, start to focus on morals. Both of them go that direction, but it's a different kind of morals. Fundamentalism, it's a morality of the self.
Yep.
And in theological modernism, with the social gospel movement,
yep.
It's a more outward. And then, of course, not emphasizing the gospel, and neither do. And that's interesting. Machen is this, you know, old school guy, right? The guy that just does what's been done at the seminary for so long. and preaches or writes a book, Christianity and Liberalism. We mentioned it before. It is against Fosdick, and it says there's Christianity, and then there's liberalism. And liberalism isn't just a slightly different view of Christianity. It's not Christianity at all.
Correct. That is his thesis. Correct. It is not Christianity at all.
And it's funny that you bring this up today, because I've been in a text conversation with a supporter of 1517, a good friend of mine, Pastor Dave Ruffner. We've been talking about a lot of things, but this came up in a conversation, and he said our conversation reminded him of Machen and Christianity and Liberalism, where he says that for the liberal, Jesus is the first Christian, and we are supposed to follow in his steps. But for the Orthodox, or for Orthodoxy, Jesus is no Christian at all. He's a savior. We are the saved.
Yep. Machen argues that theological modernism, if you want to know what this is, that comes from Germany and is still around today, is primarily a religion, a worldview, or what have you, that is anti-supernatural. It a priori says miracles, supernatural, don't exist. And of course, Machen argues that if you take the supernatural away from Christianity, you don't have the incarnation, you don't have many of these things.
Right.
So this is the battle. So fundamentalism versus modernism. While the fundamentalists were beginning to go moral, at the same time, what Machen is doing is he's saying that we've got to fight this battle because it's going to kill Christianity, just as it almost killed his faith in 1905. Machen then has a precarious relationship with the PCUSA, Princeton Seminary. It's starting to go that direction. He's arguing against it, sometimes successfully, sometimes not. But he's uncomfortable. But you don't, what are you going to do, start your own church? That's today's dumbness, right? Back then, you stay and you fight. And
he did.
He did.
Right.
And then
it was
what
seen
happened,
as being a very churchman to do that, right? Yeah. And very churchly to do that. To stay and fight for your
what's
your
in Britain, they call it the loyal opposition, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
But Machen sees what's happening, right? He's a professor at the seminary. He knows what they're teaching. He knows where it's going. And so he's sort of angling for a way out. And he does it somewhat creatively in assisting a congregation that would not send money to the presbytery, right, the main group, and will not send money to it because that money is going to missionaries who are told to read Pearl Buck's The Good Earth. So follow this. So a church is going to get booted because it's not giving money to the presbytery. Why isn't it? Because they say, you're sending out missionaries who aren't preaching the gospel. Well, this is Machen's church, and it gets booted from the PCUSA.
Oh, interesting.
And he begins the Orthodox Presbyterian Church. You might know one of these people, but probably not. They're still around. The OPC.
Oh, they're wonderful.
They're you know, are they the Wells? Are they the Wells of the Reformed?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
they're wacky.
And they're called the little church with the big mouth.
Absolutely. That doesn't do stuff on Sunday. It's weird. The OPC is becomes the opposition to the PCUSA. Eventually other churches come, and that's that needs a diagram. So the OPC and the PCUSA represent historic Christianity,
sure,
and theological modernism. And this starts to happen after Machen in all the major denominations.
Yep.
This is what happens.
Yep.
They're arguing over supernatural, which has to do primarily, oftentimes, with the veracity of Scripture.
Yep.
If you don't have the supernatural, you don't have the veracity of Scripture. And this becomes the sort of death of the major confessional church. So what we're finding is the confessional folk, or the folk just doing historic, you know, Christianity, get booted. And they lose their churches. And they lose the, you know, the land and everything. And this has a great effect for later Christianity in America, because the main seminaries are run by modernists or theological liberals or whatever.
Right, yep.
So Machen starts the OPC. The OPC is going to argue for a very, in English, is going to argue for what Christianity is. And that's why his book, Christianity and Liberalism, which does that, is the most significant book. It is the book that is read, as you mentioned, your friend, this pastor,
yeah,
knew this quote. you know, he's living in this era that I've argued on a show on Virtue in the Wasteland, that World War I and the late teens and the 20s are the most significant time in American history. You think of the Roaring 20s, the Depression, you think of the you know, Prohibition, and all these interesting things that are happening. As I mentioned before, theological matters were really important. But as everything's getting flipped around, you know, the existential crisis that comes out of World War I, like I said, that's on our podcast, but there is something going on where there's a kind of triumph of absurdity, which that's actually the subtitle to Uwe's book, but the absurdism. That is, we're asking the same questions, we're just giving answers that are meaningless. And that becomes the hallmark of the intellectual life in America, and certainly in the church. And that's problematic.
Yeah.
So that's the basic rundown, and that's what he's arguing. You know, supernaturalism, evidentialism, apologetics.
Yep.
Which isn't usually done, you know, in these circles. And so his works are sort of the guide for how you're going to break away from the mainline church.
Yep.
If you're booted, here's a model.
Yep.
Do you know what they're called, mainline churches, by the way?
No.
He's mainline. It's because they were all on the main line. These were the big things on the main train line. The main line. The main line.
Didn't know that when you broke away, you went off the main line.
Yeah, you went to little basements, church basements, and you know, you didn't have the money, right? You lost the battle.
Mm. Interesting.
Oftentimes they'd lose it because of popular opinion, and argument can be made that that's bad journalism for another time.
Well, you one time said that it was the book that defines American Christianity more than any other book.
Yeah, because it's read. You know, it's small. Machen's books are utterly readable. And, you know, so Machen's book is, it's read everywhere. Except perhaps in some theological liberal seminaries. But even then, they have to wrestle with it because just historically it's important.
I wish that were true.
Yeah.
Well,
me too.
Well, they're the most dishonest people in the world.
Right.
It's what, professors?
Liberal seminaries? Yeah. Oh my gosh. I got in my fourth year at seminary, the professor, we got along well. The professor would be passing out the bibliography for the course from the front of the room, and I'd be passing out another bibliography from the back of the room. And I could do that because we got along, but it's a completely different bibliography.
Yeah. You know, and that's in a world that we don't always have today, where you can have this loyal opposition, right? Where you can say,
yeah,
I respect you. You're a human. You're just dead wrong.
Right. Yep. Yeah.
And we're not going to, you know, go fight. You know, they didn't have the internet, thankfully.
Yeah, thank goodness.
You're just going to stay there, and you're going to argue with them.
Yep. Right.
And you could still make intellectual claims and have them put back. It's that absurdism, which is the fruit of this, which makes intellectual arguments almost impossible in the university. And the expatriates come back from France, and they bring in the arts and all these things to the university, such that the American university becomes a very peculiar.
Was that?
Sorry.
Adam's addition to the show.
You know, and that's where the American university has gone. It's fascinating because Machen is involved in all of these things because of his wide reading, because of his desire to, we're talking about this, not recording it, but his desire to not reform or change the faith with audiences, but rather to translate it faithfully to a different crowd.
Right.
That's what you do.
And he did it well.
Exactly.
That's interesting because that's the same goal as Luther during the Reformation, right?
Sure.
It's not to create
C.S. Lewis. C.S. Lewis, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, let's take our break there. When we come back, Dan will tell us about something.
Hey, welcome to our break. Once again, we have Dr. Dan Van Voorhis on the show, and I'm not going to let him hijack me this time.
All right.
But he is going to get an ad. We're going to talk about a new series you guys are doing over at the podcast on Virtue in the Wasteland, which is cool because you guys usually kind of jump around a lot. And
what are you trying to say?
And so you are copying the Thinky Fellows.
I think
and,
Dan should feel judged.
And taking a cute no, but you guys are doing something really cool that I think plays in very well with our show.
Absolutely. Well, it's ties in with the organization, and that's 1517, what Jeff and I decided to do on the podcast earlier, around the Reformation celebration of I remember there was the beginning of this year, of course. We decided we wanted to take the year 1517 and break it down historically so that people could understand what's going on. And so we could talk about what's happening right before 1517, what's happening in that year, and then its effects. So we've got those episodes that we'll link to. Right now, Jeff and I have just started a 6-part series on the Reformation outside of Germany. Because so many of us think, well, the Reformation, it was Luther, done.
Right.
No, there's a Reformation. We just did Zwingli this past Monday, and we talked about all manner of things. Curious. And we're going to go into England. We're going to go to Scandinavia. These things that probably may have affected you more than, if you're not German, right? I'm not German. It affects sort of our traditions. So this series, you can go to virtueinthewasteland.com, iTunes, the same way you get this episode, and look for it.
Everybody that subscribes to Thinking Fellows ought to subscribe to Virtue in the Wasteland and Vice Versa there.
Yeah, and one is, you know, short and pointed, and the other is long and rambling, but, you know, it's what we
do. Which one's which?
Yeah, I think so.
No, this is fantastic. One of the main ideas behind the series that we're doing here, The Great Thinkers of the Christian Faith, was to get outside of Lutheranism a little bit, because I think that's one of the major problems within Lutheranism today is kind of this inward looking, we're the only people that matter type thing. Oh. And I think looking at outside of ourselves through great thinkers, but now also who were the other major players in the Reformation, I think that's just going to be an awesome series. Yeah. I can't wait to listen to it personally. Yeah.
And we do it in our style, and it's fun. I mean, we're going to do some stuff with some social stuff, and we talk about William Tell and the Affair of the Sausages, and we're going to try and tie those into what's going on. The Affair of the Sausages had to do with Lent and
sure it did.
Fighting. All right, come on. So check that out, Virtue in the Wasteland, 6-part series on the Reformation outside of Germany.
That's going to be in the show notes, so make sure and go subscribe to their show.
Thanks.
All right, Dr. Keith.
Yes, we're back into it. We're still talking about Machen here. Dan, you provided us with quite a bit of historical background about him and sort of his theological upbringing. What are his major works? What should we pay attention to? If our listeners want to read some Machen, we've referenced Christianity and Liberalism. Where should they go to read more?
Well, make sure you first read Christian Liberalism, right? Yes. Before you read anything else, you got to read that.
Yep.
And after that, I think, he wrote so much. I mean, the Virgin Birth.
What is faith?
What is faith? Yeah, what is faith is a good for what it's doing.
Sure.
I think something like the Virgin Birth is interesting because it's bringing a kind of it's bringing evidentialist apologetics.
Sure.
It's doing some stuff that wasn't being done at the time.
Yep.
It's a little more heavy than What is Faith, which is a little more popular. So I would go either direction.
Or the origin of Paul's religion. That's a little more technical, but the idea behind it was that Paul was a follower of Jesus in a way that you and I wouldn't recognize. That was modernism again, and he was going after that one.
Mm-hmm. I read a work of his called The Supernaturalness of Christ, which is a little more technical, but it's just a basic historical, evidential apologetic.
Yep.
If you're into that.
And then if you go, I'll put a link up, as I think I mentioned before. He also wrote on politics, and he wrote on all number of things. And it's quick, and it's...
Christianity in the State?
Yep.
My gosh, he thought we had no business in this. He was a libertarian. He thought that we had no business here having the government in charge of education.
He played with economics as well. You can find some of the stuff there. So, a very fascinating guy, and that's one of the reasons why I found him and think he's that important. That what he was doing in terms of not only the most important thing, arguing against theological modernism in a way that other people could read it. Outside his tradition, the layperson could read it.
Yep,
that's his contribution.
Yep,
to American Christianity.
And there were people who acknowledged that in their obituaries of Machen.
Yeah,
I have on my screen two of them. Walter Lippmann, who was no Christian, Walter Lippmann acknowledging the greatness of
Walter
what Machen had done.
Journalist extraordinaire. Everywhere. Yeah.
And he knew that Machen had won on his thesis that whatever liberalism is, it ain't Christianity. And Lippmann acknowledges he won that. The same and similar thing from atheist H.L. Mencken.
Yeah.
Right.
Recent tributes to Dr. Machen. And Mencken acknowledges the same thing. Machen outthought him.
Mencken is a fascinating character. But just that Mencken and Machen would be friendly tells us just another thing about the age. And I'm not going to harp on this too much, but it's the idea that people could have intelligent arguments.
Yep.
That you could say to someone, you're wrong.
Yep.
And that didn't mean... you know, you're, you know, slander or, you know, it was just...
Or it didn't even mean that you were an idiot.
Yeah.
Right?
No.
Yeah, your research position is wrong. Here's a better research position that I think is right.
And so you have, and it also... Mencken probably isn't hanging around with a lot of Christians. Not a huge fan.
Sure.
But he would with Machen.
Yep.
Machen has a quote about, you know, oranges and cigars, you know, that he just had this sort of earthiness, despite being what am I calling egghead. I mean, the guy was brilliant in some of the stuff, the technical stuff that he did. You know, it's interesting. So he leaves the mainline church with the OPC. Now, there's an argument made by Francis Schaeffer. Francis Schaeffer,
Rod knew him.
Yeah.
Pardon?
Rod knew him.
Sure.
Yeah, they reclined in the grass.
They reclined in the grass at La Brie.
La Brie, which was sort of the center. I mean, so significant.
Sure.
Francis Schaeffer wrote a book called The Crisis in the Evangelical Church, I believe. We might check that and put a link up there. and what he argues, argues for Christianity against liberalism, praises Machen, but then says, the problem with the Presbyterian Church and churches in America in the wake of what happened with the OPC was that you started to splinter once the dam, broke. Now you're splintering every time you can. And I remember you had me when I was a student, Rod, stand up, go up to the board and do the Presbyterian tree of, they broke off from here, they broke off from here.
And I say to Dr. Horton and Dr. Riddlebarger, when we do some kind of split, it's binary. Mm. When you split, you go to everything.
Well, and Francis Schaeffer brings this up, that it's just kind of the spirit of a lack of the, what we were talking before, arguments where you would stay in the church.
Yeah.
And argue. And there's something a little bit off if it wasn't liberals, if it didn't negate the gospel, well, stay and argue.
Mm-hmm.
But that stops happening, and this happens in what I was talking about before, the absurdism that comes in through World War I. In terms of why I think Machen is someone that needs to be put up, you may not have heard of him, and it's unfortunate that these people oftentimes are...
Yeah, I would imagine most listeners haven't.
If you read just his Christianity and Liberalism, when he's done with, say, six doctrines, there is nothing left of modernism but powder on the floor. He decimates it.
Yeah.
He absolutely decimates it. He outthinks them.
No, I'm going to put that really high on my reading list because, I mean, my only experience with him at Concordia has, been association to Westminster or something like that.
Well, and Westminster Seminary, which is now sort of where, the Reformed go.
To California, not Philly.
It starts in Philly, and then it comes to Escondido.
The daughter is greater than the mother.
Well, I just ordered the title is Education, Christianity, and the State, and I just ordered it, so.
Yep.
So look at the Thinking Fellows website. We have a new reading section on the front page, and you're going to see some Machen there coming out pretty soon.
Yep.
Brilliant, man. Brilliant.
So, Dan, what else do we need to know?
What else do you need to know?
Yeah.
You need to know that it was believed that there were two different religions. It was understood, and Virginia Woolf says something. She says something around the 1920s, the world changed. And it's this really just interesting comment about, and so there's like two other quotes that say something happened. And what did we lose? And I think that's why not only do we want to read Machen, because he's one of these guys right before that is arguing in declarative sentences about what's true. It's important to see how that goes away. And so by reading Machen, I think not only is it good, important, it teaches you to see what a good book is as opposed to a bad book.
Sure.
And if you've only read four books, you might not know. And
which
so it's,
is which.
Which is which. And that's why we need to be reading, what's Lewis's quote? For every new book you read, read two old ones. And I think Christianity and Liberalism counts as an old book.
Right.
That's and great. So read it. And it'll not only give you good information, but it will also give you a way of thinking, a manner of thinking, which is so foreign today, but so necessary.
Yep.
You already mentioned it with sort of the church break, but is there a significant group of people that followed him, that came after him, that sort of saw him as their candle bearer?
You know, so much of his work in the seminary, right? In the seminary, they realize the argument you're having over there is fine. The argument in the seminary was, you're doing apologetics wrong. You're doing how do we get at these things wrong. Mm. And so what happens is, because he's seen in the seminary primarily as the evidentialist, a guy named Cornelius Van Til will come to sort of take that position after Machen eventually, and the Reformed go fully against evidentialism.
They go presuppositional.
They go presuppositional. And so for them, Machen is just that apologetics guy.
Yeah.
And of course, once again, just read the stuff, and you see that he is much more than that. And I could, you know, sort of give a hoot about what was happening in the seminary. I'm going to look at what was happening in the parish.
Sure.
What, you know, we talked about Arndt before, and he was a pastor. Machen's not a pastor, but he's getting resources to Christians that they can read to argue against what are false and dangerous things.
Yep.
All right. So as we close this out, we'll put quite the bibliography or the purchase list for Machen in the show notes. And we need to thank Dr. Van Voorhis for coming on, doing two episodes.
Glad right in a row. Thank
glad to be here. We can't smoke in the Virtue in the Wasteland studios. Got to talk to Jeff.
Well, it's our garage. So.
So thank you once again for listening to the show. If you are enjoying this new series, if you have enjoyed the Thinking Fellows in general, I'd like to remind people that this show is purely brought to you by donations. You know, we don't charge for episodes. We try to, you know, keep everything, I think most things at 1517, free. And when it comes to things that can't be free, like books, we try to make them as reasonably priced as possible. This isn't about making a profit. This is about getting as many resources into the hands of people as we possibly
can. Machen was significant because he got things into the hands of the laity.
Yep.
That's what 1517 is.
That's about. Right.
Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
And so that's the goal here. So if you would like to support that mission, if you would like to support the Thinking Fellows, Virtue in the Wasteland, 1517, everything else that goes on there, you can go to 1517legacy.com/donate. And there you'll be presented with a donate page. You can direct funds to the general fund. You can direct them directly to the Thinking Fellows or the Virtue in the Wasteland podcast or whatever you like. But every dollar that you give us goes directly towards spreading the gospel, defending the gospel in all places, through podcasts like this, through books and the like. So thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting the show. We hope you continue to stay with us as we march through this series, as we get some new interesting characters on the show, try to get as many great thinkers of the Christian faith as we can.
All right.
All right. We'll catch you next time.
Bye-bye.